Mishnah in Maseches, Mishnah in Brachos, that says that the way that the person davens, you get a kind of get an intuition, a sense of how it went. Right? Chanina Mendoza, I think the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, when he would daven, when he would mispal al acholim, so he would be able to say, Zachai, Zemis, and he said, Minayin lo, how do you know that? So he said, I could tell, based on the way that I daven. So, you know, if we feel good about it, then we should feel good about it. We should come out of the Yom Tov with confidence. Okay. But on that note, the question is, where do we go after the Yantif? Welcome. Where do we go after the Yantif? So the truth is, again, we kind of picked up, this Chabura kind of picked up where some of us were. And again, the earlier Chaburas are online. But in Os Aleph, which we have not yet studied together, I just want to, there's someone who is a member of our Chabura who's not here right now. But was pushing me really hard before Yom Kippur. He kept saying, listen, you've created the backdrop for what we're trying to get to. You've sort of posed the question, but you didn't give us any answers. And he kept saying to me, I can't go to Yom Kippur until I have an answer. I have to know how to stand before Hashem and to really do this. I mean, we've created the backdrop of what we're trying to do, to be Lifnei Hashem. He was texting me, he was calling me, he's like, you gotta give me an answer. He kept giving me deadlines, you gotta give me an answer. So I finally said to him, hold on a second, I don't have to give you any answer by Yom Kippur. This Sefer is not about how to deal with Yom Kippur. This Sefer is dafka about how to create Yom Kippur the rest of the year. Right? In Os Aleph, again, you don't have it on the page in front of you, but we're going to learn Os Zayin Amir Tashem tonight. But back in Os Aleph, the Rebbe says, V'ayim ein kol echad miyisrael margish l'mashal b'yom ha-kippurim u'beprad v'eiz kol nidre v'n'ila. Does not every Jew in the world feel that by Yom Kippur, specifically by Kol Nidre, by Ni'ila, Bitul Kol Taiva, Hiro V'Ratzon Lo Tov, don't we all feel so lit up on Yom Kippur? So I said to him, this Sefer doesn't need to provide you with the answer how to come to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is easy. Lifnei Hashem Titaru, everyone feels Lifnei Hashem on Yom Kippur. Question is, once Yom Kippur is over, and we have to painfully acknowledge, as we do, the second Yom Kippur is over, that we're not going to be angels much longer, right? And it's impossible to stay on that level of being Lifnei Hashem. So how do you feel it the rest of the year? How do we continue to live Lifnei Hashem? Now Hashem gave us these days, and I want to just talk for a moment before we delve into Os Zayin together. Hashem gave us these days as a period of time to sort of help us with that transition. To try. Sukkot is a time of gathering. We're gathering in the summer crop, and it's a time of gathering in the spiritual crops from this time of the year. We've worked hard throughout Elul, throughout Rosh Hashanah, throughout the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. We worked hard on Yom Kippur, and the goal is to hold on to it as best we can. That's not always so easy to do. But Hashem gave us very, very elevated days. These days are particularly very elevated days to try to maintain the connection to a Kaddish Baruch. There's a small sefer called the Rachamei Ha'af. Rav Yaakov Katina, he was a Rav in Chust, and this edition that I have here has footnotes from Rav Shlomo Zalman of Ehrenreich, who's also a great author of many Svarim. So he writes in the footnote under the entry for Dveikus, because that's really what the Sefer is about. The Sefer is, how do we cling to Hashem when we're not feeling Lifnei Hashem on a regular Tuesday afternoon, as we keep saying, on a regular Mincha, a regular Maariv in the depths of the winter? How do I feel Lifnei Hashem then? On Yom Kippur, it's not a question. Yom Kippur, I'm literally bumping into a Kaddish Baruch. That's how Rav Soloveitchik used to explain the Tara that comes. I don't know if I mentioned this last week. I feel like I mentioned this somewhere recently. That on Yom Kippur, Lifnei Hashem Titaru means we're literally rubbing up against the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And when you're in Mechubar, when you're Davuk, when you're making contact with something as pure Kivyachal, you know, to make contact Kivyachal with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, so that rubs off on a person. So the Tara is just rubbing off on us by proximity to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. But how do you keep that the rest of the year? How does one maintain the Dveikus? So he has an entry here where he's writing on Dveikus. This Sefer, by the way, this Rachamei Ha'av, was written really for his children. He wrote 50... How many pieces did he write? 58 pieces of Musar, of inspiration, of different ideas for his children to be studied. It was sort of his last will and testament in a Sefer form. And he asked that it shouldn't be printed. But, you know, as these things go, by the time it trickled down to grandchildren, great-grandchildren, it was time to make it available for the tzibur. So anyway, so the Rachamei Ha'av, in entry 16, is an entry on Dveikus. And in the footnotes, again, from Rav Shlomo Zalman Ehrenreich, he quotes from the Chassam Sofer. He says that Rav Shimon Sofer, the son of the Chassam Sofer, said about his father during these days, the post-Yom Kippur days. This is unbelievable. He said, Shimon Sofer noted, he said that my father wrote a book of Shirim. Chassam Sofer wrote a whole book of songs, beautiful poetry. So he asked his father, he said, when do you write these songs? He saw that he had these beautiful, beautiful poems, these beautiful songs to Hashem. Because of Sham, Shisholas of Chassam Sofer, Amosai Hayalopnai Lasos Shirim. He says to his father, you're Rav Moshe Sofer, you're the Gadol HaDor, you're the Posek of the generation. You have so many, you're so busy, and I know your schedule, how busy you are with your learning Torah. When do you write these songs? The Heshev Achsam Sofer, Shebedalid Yamim Shebein Yom HaKippurim L'Sukkos. He said, all of those beautiful songs are written in these days. These days, these couple of days that Hashem gives us between Yom Kippur and Sukkos, Migodel HaDveikus Shelo, Lo HaYachol Lilmod. Achsam Sofer said, I was on such a high, my Dveikus and Hashem continued, even after Yom Kippur, that the clinging to Hashem was so intense, I couldn't even bring myself to learn. I was just so on fire that all I could do was just write compositions, beautiful poems and songs to Hashem. Imagine Achsam Sofer. Oz Yasar V'chiber Shirim L'Kadosh Baruch Hu Arka. That's what he heard from his father. And there's a tremendous intensity that we should feel during these days, that we're still trying to hold on to. There's a Medrash in Amor, Medrash Tanchuma in Amor, where the Medrash says, commenting on the pasuk that describes ulakachtem lachem bayom rishon, we're all going to take emir tashem ulakachtem lachem, hopefully we have our lulav and esrog ready to go, ulakachtem lachem, take it for you bayom rishon. So the Medrash has a very funny question. It's a Medrash Tanchuma in Amor Oschaf Beis, v'chi rishono ulakachtem lachem bayom rishon, you should take for you, right, priyat hadar, kapos tamarim, you take the dalan meaning, you take it on the first day. So the Medrash says, it's not the first day. It's not the first day of the month. It's the 15th of the month. It's the 15th of Tishrei. So again, this is one of these Medrashim where we said, you know, I thought I understood the puzzle. Rishon means the first day of Sukkot. But obviously the Medrash wanted to bring something out more. So if it's the 15th of the month, why are you calling it Rishon? Rishon Rishon means that it's the beginning of the new count for Averus. It's the beginning of the new count for Averus. What does that mean? What's happening between Yom Kippur and the first day of Sukkot? Right, well, apparently Hashem's not keeping track of Averus. Now, it doesn't mean it's a free-for-all and go have a good time. What it means is that we're on such a spiritual high coming off of Yom Kippur that there's really no time to do Averus. We're so busy, the way that the Medrash is understood. We're so busy building our sukkah. We're so busy picking out our dal amina. We're so busy preparing ourselves spiritually, physically, for the Yom Tov that that sukkah should be here. We're so busy that we don't have time to do Averus. So you'll say, but once what? Once sukkah's coming, now we have time to do Averus? Okay, so the svarim say, you see from here that the hachana for a mitzvah in some ways can be even greater than the mitzvah itself. That the preparation for the mitzvah, the building of the sukkah, which is, yeah, I could argue whether it is a mitzvah or it's not even a mitzvah, the language of the Ramah in two places makes it sound like there's a mitzvah, right? The mitzvah after Yom Kippur to build your sukkah. Is it really a mitzvah? It's more of a hechsher mitzvah, but a hechsher mitzvah is also a very special thing, as you see from here. But again, you see that these are very elevated days, that we're trying desperately to hold on a little bit to the ha'aros, right? The light that came down on upon Klal Yisrael and Yom Kippur. Let me just give you one other interesting ha'ara, again, just to show us the chashivas of these days. And that is a comment that Rav Yonasan Eibshitz has in his drasha, the Yaros Dvash. There's an interesting gemara in Yoma, and again, it's exactly what we'll get back to the Piyazat Zerabi, but it's exactly what he's describing in that opening paragraph that I mentioned a moment ago. That Yom Kippur, if Yitzhahara tries to get a person to an Avera, it's not going to happen. Because the Torah, the gemara says, Yoma Daf Chafam Ad Aleph, Satan biyoma di kipuri lesle reshusa listune. The Satan on Yom Kippur has nothing to say. He can't talk on Yom Kippur. He's not able to get you on Yom Kippur. Mimai, how do you know such a thing? Omer Rami Bar Chama, Hasatan bigamatria tlas meya veshisin va'arba have. Tlas meya veshisin va'arba yome isle reshusa listune. Biyoma di kipuri lesle reshusa listune. Says the Gemara, a fascinating thing. Gemara says Hasatan is Begamatria 364. Shusta Shishiva. 364. There are 364 days of the year where the Satan can get you. There's one day of the year that the Satan Hasatan Begamatria 364. There's one day of the year that the Satan cannot get you, and that's Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur, you're Lifnei Hashem, you would never fall for his tricks. So what's interesting Rav Yonasan Eibshitz points out in his Yaros Devash, in his Drashos, he says, hold on a second. Why are you calling him HaSatan? I mean, it makes the Gematria work. HaSatan is 364. But a line before you said, Satan be on with the Kippuri, lesli reshusa lestunai. Usually use the Hey Hayadiyah, if you know, it's like this one as opposed to the other ones. When it says HaChamor in the Torah, you know, it's talking about a special donkey as opposed to a regular donkey. But there's only one Satan, I hope, I think, as far as I know. HaSatan, no Satan. Hey, call him Satan. So what's that extra Hey? So Rav Yonasan Eibshitz says, the truth is, there are really, you know, 5 days that the Satan can't get you. Yes, Yom Kippur is the main day that he can't get you, but there's 4 other days also that he can't really get you. And that, again, are these days, these few days that we have in between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, where, again, we feel particularly close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we feel that the Sultan can't get us. I'll just add one other interesting remiss. Since my father's here and he loves Ramazim so much, I'd be remiss not to share this one. There's an idea, I think I mentioned it, one of the earlier Chaburas from Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, that everything written by the Rishonim was written with Ruach HaKodesh up to a certain point. Again, there's different checkpoints of where people say that. But again, the reason we take the Rambam so seriously is because the Rambam was writing with a certain divine inspiration. He was writing, his pen was being guided. And it's true about Rashi, it's true about many of the Rishonim. So I always like to note, as Rav Tzadok writes in one of his Sfarim, that if you look in the, Rav Tzadok says, even the Simanim in the Shulchan Aruch are with precision. That if a particular halacha falls out of the particular chapter, the number of that chapter is significant. The same thing is true for the Sefer HaChinuch. When the Sefer HaChinuch wrote his 613 mitzvos, so wherever a mitzvah falls out, there's a deeper significance. There's something beyond the surface. So isn't it interesting that the mitzvah of tshuva is mitzvah number 364? Why? Because for 364 days of the year, a person needs to do tshuva. But the Gemara says there's one day a year that you don't need to do tshuva because we're lifnei Hashem. And again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us these days after Sukkot to try to the best of our ability to hold on. But I'll let us all in on our secret. It's not going to last. And that's exactly what this Chabur is about. So with that, we return to the words of the Piyazat. I hope everyone has a copy. Anyone not have a copy? Okay, you got the last one. Hold on. Is that the right page? Yeah. Okay, O Zion. We're on page 18. O Zion. We left off last time. Again, the Piyazat Rebbe was trying to help us to at least accept, not yet learn how to use our mind, but to at least accept that our mind can do a lot more than it's already doing. To believe that, and to somehow find a way to slip past that analytical filter that's blocking us from believing in anything beyond what our senses allow us to perceive. So with that, we continue. O Zion. Aval al nidalig v'pam achas kol kach harbe al mishi yesh bo kvar zmani machshava tovazer. He says, to be a member of our chabura, and again, while we're not exactly following, he spells out the rules, what it means to create a chabura b'nei machshava tova. Not exactly playing by the rules, we have to meet more regularly. We'll start once a week, we'll see if that works. See if you can commit to that before we make further commitments. But he says, let's not jump ahead of ourselves here and try to tap into something very quickly. This is a process. And like I said last week, this is, you know, if anyone's coming for a shiur where you're going to be able to just come once in a while and you'll get something, but it's really, we're going to have to work again as a chavura. And I'm happy. I'm happy that last week people were offering comments. Please jump in and let's try to make it a conversation. Because it's going to take some time before we learn how to actually do some of the things that Piyazat Rebbe is trying to teach us to do. So he says, let's not jump ahead of ourselves, and let's not assume that if there's a member of the Chavura who's a little more advanced, a little more mindful, has this koach of tapping into higher things, of deeper consciousness, let's not all assume that we're ready for that. Let's take it slow. Ki ritzoneinu bazeh lahalos b'chavraseinu or b'chaburaseinu as kol chavireinu el zmanei kodosh ke'elu. We're trying to bring everyone to a point of elevated consciousness. U'legalos gam behem machshava Torah. We all want to get there, and we're working together. And again, the koch of the rabbin will have hopefully a tremendous effect on us. The kamor, and as we described last week, habikur zeh masherotza v'dorish mikol machshava hisdamus el kol machshava solo. This bikur we described last week, again, this filter that checks everything, that every thought that enters your mind and questions and challenges. We said a child doesn't have that filter. A child, we describe, doesn't have that filter. A child allows his or her mind to explore more fantastic things, right? To contemplate ideas which are unrealistic. As an adult, when a person starts to have a thought that's unrealistic, that doesn't fit into the logic of the order of this world, all of a sudden the adult, you know, is repulsed by that thought and pushes it aside. And there's a part of ourselves, this koach of bikur that checks everything that's passing through. So again, habikur zeh, masherotze v'dorish mikol machshava. This bikur, this filter, that demands that every thought that enters has a hizdamus al kol machshava sa'olam. It has to fit into, I'm out of copy, sorry. That it fits into, that your thoughts have to somehow fit into the machshava sa'olam, has to fit into your experience in this world. That it has to match up with reality as you know it. Zohi minia gedola shemonas esa'odam mikol machshava nekiya. This is one of the greatest impediments, one of the greatest minios, when it comes to developing pure consciousness. I'm sorry, I think that's no, you can have it. It's just, it's side one from that. This was the, oh wait, no, this is double side. I'm sorry. Okay, Daniel, I ripped you off. Okay, someone has a one-sided sheet, which is not going to help you. But that one has, you're on page 18. So if you have a page that doesn't have 18 on it, you're in trouble. I'm sorry. So again, so one of the greatest challenges is getting past the filter. There's a filter. There's a rational filter that doesn't allow us to perceive anything other than what our senses are used to. And we're trying to train ourselves to realize that our minds can go much higher, can go much deeper. And it's only because we've been trapped in a certain thing for a long period of time that we don't appreciate. I'm just remembering now, the Gesher HaChaim. The Gesher HaChaim is a three-volume work, primarily in Halacha, on Hilchos Avelos, and laws related to the life cycle, Gesher HaChaim. But the third section he wrote in Yanei Musar, Hashkafas HaChaim. Very, very interesting thing. It's a small section. It's been translated into English. It's very worthwhile. The Gesher HaChaim, the Bridge of Life. And Rav Tikhachinsky, Zatzal, in his Gesher HaChaim, he describes the following. He says, imagine a person who was never blessed with the ability to see. They could never see. And they didn't really have an awareness of some of the things that we're all used to that are really quite supernatural, quite amazing. Take, for example, the sun. And this person's never seen the sun. Now, let's make it more interesting, as he does in his writings. And he says, let's pretend this person not only was blind for the first 30 years of his life, right, but he didn't have the intellect to appreciate that there's a concept of a sun, and just that he's never seen it. He has no understanding of the sun whatsoever. All of a sudden, on his 30th birthday, all of a sudden, he now has the power to see the sun and to understand the sun. But he has the intellect of a 30-year-old. He's not encountering the sun for the first time as a little child. So he has the mind of the refinement and the depth of knowledge of a 30-year-old. And yet he's encountering the sun for the first time. So he says to his friend, oh my gosh, do you see that? That's an unbelievable thing. And his friend says, relax, it's the sun. It's here, it's going to always be there. Right? And it shines its light down to this world. And when he's describing there, he's saying, so why is it that most of us take the sun for granted, that there's a ball of fire suspended in the sky at a very precise distance from planet Earth? If it was farther from Earth, the Earth would freeze over. If it was closer to Earth, we'd all be suffering terribly. We wouldn't be able to withstand its heat. And somehow, you know, miraculously, it's floating in the sky. Now you'll tell me, okay, science, we can explain how it maintains its position in the sky. But it's an amazing thing. And most of us use it and benefit from it and encounter it all the time, and we never stop once to think, wow, how amazing that is. And it's true about so many things in our world. So if Tikhachinsky says, so why is that so? It's only because we've gotten used to it. When we were a child and we weren't smart enough to really develop a mature outlook and appreciation for it, we already got used to it, and now that we're older, we take it for granted. But if Hayitachin, there could be this individual who didn't have the intellect and never saw the sun, and now he has his first encounter with the sun, it would be unbelievable. But again, we've trained ourselves a certain way, and therefore there are miraculous things that are in our world that we don't even appreciate, let alone what's happening in the spiritual worlds beyond our senses. So, yeah, please.
The filter. I was trying to think about this after last week.
Sure.
Is it a negative aspect, or is there a positive?
No, the filter, of course, is realistic.
There's a positive aspect to having this filter within you as well.
For our daily functions, I think that is exactly what this filter does. This filter makes me a responsible human being. Right? But the filter also makes me so much a human being that I forget that I'm a chelek elokam imal, that I'm carrying a spark of the divine inside of myself. That becomes a much quieter voice inside myself, Right? And the more realistic version of myself is getting caught up on paying my bills and shopping for food and doing, again, all of the normal things that a human being of flesh and blood has to do in this world.
So he's not suggesting we destroy the filter.
So no, we can't destroy the filter. Then you're living a whole life of dimyon. And that, again, that was the question that we posed, I think, 2 weeks ago. Maybe it was already last week. Right? Where the person says, you know, I want to experience something beyond, but it just, you know, it seems unrealistic. So we have to be healthy, normal, emotionally stable human beings who are also spiritually striving individuals. Now that's a hard balance, but it's entirely possible. It's so entirely possible that the Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Tefillah, and in Sifrei Chabad, in Chabad Chassidus in particular, but other Sfarim also, they emphasize that anything that's written in Shulchan Aruch is written for every Jew. Shulchan Aruch is not a manual for higher consciousness. Not everyone has to read B'nai Machshava Tova. I think it's kedai, it's worthwhile to study it and to spend a little time over the course of our life thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and talking about him in this way, that the Piyazetz Rebbe is guiding us. I think it's worthwhile, but you don't have to. Shulchan Aruch is written for every Jew to live and die by. So why would Shulchan Aruch tell us in Hilchos Tefillah that during Tefillah it's possible for a person to experience Hispashtus HaGashmi? Hispashtus HaGashmi means that on some level my soul detaches from my body and is able to have an out-of-body experience. I know it sounds like some hokey thing that, you know, is on some Lahavdil sci-fi channel on television, right? Or some strange movie. But it's a halach in Shulchan Aruch. So the Sifrei Chabad emphasized, so that means that it's shayach to every single one of us. Now most of us have no training in it. Most people will go through their life never experiencing it. But the Piyazetz Rebbe is trying to help us begin a process of developing ourselves, whether or not I'll ever be able to have my neshama leaving my... I don't even know what that means. I have no clue what that means. And I've spent some time working on this Sefer, and I don't have a clue what that means. And I've never experienced it. I'm sure most of us never experienced it. And I'm sure many of us feel we never will experience it in the way that's being described, that Hispashtus HaGashmi, to leave my guf behind and have an out-of-body experience during Tefillah. But it's entirely possible and realistic, so much so that it's on the pages of the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Tefillah, that every single Jew can experience that. It takes a lot of work to get there. Tefillah is called an avoda for a reason. Right? It's avoda shebalev, and it's more than avoda shebalev, as the Sfarim explained. It's really the avoda of the entire body. It takes tremendous, tremendous work to be good at Tefillah. The Chazan Ish said about himself that he worked harder in his Tefillah than he did in his Torah. Now, if you have any clue how hard the Chazan Ish worked in his Torah, they tell a story that's not an apocryphal tale. It's an absolutely true story about the Chazan Ish, who used to learn in this small little room. It was basically, he would sit, he had one place to learn, he had a little bed to rest when he got tired. One time, the Chazan Ish was learning behind the closed door. All of a sudden, they heard him collapse. So whoever was outside, the family, Talmidim, whoever was waiting outside, they come rushing in, and they see the Chazan Ish, he's lying, he's passed out on the floor. Well, he's not passed out, but he's lying on the floor, in front of, like a foot away from the bed. So they help the Rebbe up, they pick him up, they put him in the bed, they see he's exhausted, and they say to the Chazan Ish, what happened? So he says, I calculated how much energy it would take for me to get from my desk to my bed. And I gave every last bit of strength. I mean, it sounds like one of these crazy stuff, but it's an absolutely true story. He had a precise, he was so self-aware, he could calculate how much energy it would take to get from his chair to his bed, right? And every other bit of koach he gave to the Ritva and the Rashva and the Gemara that he was learning. And he miscalculated one step that day. And he fell on the floor. Right? Now that was his Torah. His Torah was so passionate and with such commitment that the Chazan Ish once, I read this once, I don't know if it's true, I can't verify it, but this is what's brought, that the Chazan Ish, when he was learning Maseches Eruvin, had put so much energy into the learning that he ate 1 year on Yom Kippur. He was allowed to eat because he was so weakened from his learning that he had a heter. He was able to eat on Yom Kippur. But the Chazan Ish said about himself, and there's countless stories about his commitment to learning, the Chazan Ish said about himself, I worked harder on Tefillah than I did on my learning. Okay, so if we think we're just going to roll into shul, right on time for Ashrei, and jump right into Mincha for 6 minutes, you know, and then get back to my office, you're not going to experience Hispashtus HaGashmi like that, that's for sure. It's a avodah shebalev, it takes a lot of work. Okay, so we have this analytical filter that we're trying to fight against, that we're trying to get past. Again, not to destroy. Doug, you're 100% correct. We're not looking to remove the filter. The filter is a very healthy part of who we are. But to be able to get past it once in a while, to taste something, you know, lamala. Okay, so this is again, he says about five lines in Os Zayin. Zoe Menia Gedola, the line begins Gedola. This is a great impediment. It prevents us from having pure, refined thoughts. To even experience, again, a moment of pure prayer. And isn't this, says the Rebbe, isn't this the backbone of everything that's gone wrong with my relationship with Hashem, my belief in Hashem, my Yiras Hashemayim, my Avas Hashem? How do I get to my belief in Hashem and my awe of God and my love of God, right, if I don't even know how to encounter God? I don't know how to meet up with Him. Because anytime I try to meet up with Him, there's a part of me that there's this nagging, you know, call inside of myself, like, it's unrealistic to have an encounter with God, a face-to-face encounter with the Ribono Shel Olam. You're going to feel with Nei Hashem. Yom Kippur. No one's going to argue on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says, the Satan doesn't even bother with you on Yom Kippur, like we saw before. It's not worth his time. And we all felt it. There's no one who doesn't feel by Ni'ila, you know, question, what does it mean to be in the presence of Hashem? We all feel that. So the question is, okay, but how do I develop the tools to always feel that? And this is, he says, the Iker Sivas Pegama Muna Yirav Ava Gamki. So listen to what happened. He said, one time a young man approached me. One time a young rabbinic student approached me, and he asked me that he was complaining. It's not something he was complaining. He was upset about something. And he said the following. If I had permission to think about something, a picture, right? And this was the problem we were grappling with last week. I wanna picture Hashem, but Hashem doesn't have a body. So what am I supposed to picture? Even if I want to be more attentive, more mindful. Mindful about what? What am I thinking about? I'm picturing an old man with a long white beard. That's not Hashem. He doesn't have a body. What am I thinking about? What am I meditating on? So he says, if I was allowed to picture something, I would then be able to pray my heart out as if I was in the presence of a kol yachol, of an omnipotent being, who could save me, who could help me, who could transform me. Or I'd be able to tremble to picture myself standing before Hashem's throne. That would cause me to tremble. Then I could have some really good davening. But I'm not supposed to think about those things. Since you're asking me to be mindful of something which has no form and has no image, and I have to listen to what this complaint is. It's an important piece in the puzzle. Right? You walk into many shuls, you'll see. Right? You're not going to see who you're standing in front of, but you should at least know who you're standing in front of. To have an intellectual awareness is also very chashuv. And this bachur, this young man, says to the Piazatz Rebbe, you know, that much I'm aware. Rakidia Yeshli, I know that I'm standing in front of Hashem. I know that I'm supposed to be able to close my eyes and just, I don't know what I'm picturing, but I know that Hashem is very close to me and He's listening attentively. That's very chashuv. If I could do that, that would also be Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamit, to just be aware of Hashem being opposite me, that would go very far. But he's frustrated because how do I you know, when I'm in the presence of a Melech Basar V'dam, when I'm standing before a judge who's ruling on my particular case, I feel his presence because I see him and I hear him and I'm interacting with him. And there's a dialogue of sorts. There's a give and take. So I know I have the awareness that I'm in front of Hashem. Yediyah shehi b'lo machshava. It's an awareness. It's a knowledge without any thought. Because again, I don't know what to think about. U'v'lo machshava. Yefshur li lias orer. Im lo ba'is oras mi'atzma. Without this machshava, without being able to picture something, so then I don't know how to awaken myself. And that's why I roll into mincha and I roll out of mincha. And I feel like, well, why do I even bother coming half the time if I'm not going to really tap into anything? He says, I'm not able to have a hisoris, an awakening, a spiritual awakening. Umikol shekein, shuuchal od lahasmir bahar gashos yislavus e'yaf sheli klal. Right? I didn't translate one part. He says, in lo ba hisoris mi'atma. Once in a while, he says, spontaneously, once in a while, you're tapped in for some reason. I have such vivid memories of certain points, and I know I was tapped in those particular times. Most tefillahs that I've daven in my life, I don't remember at all. So much so that if you ask me, did I daven mincha, I have to pause, I have to think, where was I, what time was I, where did I go, when did I daven mincha? Right? Oh yes, I stopped off at Beth Aaron on my way over to Yeshiva Seichel HaTorah to daven mincha. But there's certain tefillos in my life that I remember, and I could close my eyes and tap it. I could smell it. I could taste it. And I was in Eretz Yisrael for a year. This was back to the Yotav Shin Samach. So before Pesach, like many yeshivas offer, right, to take a trip to some of the Chorbonos of Europe to see some of the places where Jews once lived. I went to Prague, I went to various concentration camps, various centers of Torah, great centers of Hasidus, which at the time I wasn't so connected or interested in learning Hasidus, so Chaval, I kind of missed out. I was in the Beis Medrash of the Sfas Emes, stood by the kever of some Megal at Mukos, a great tzaddikim throughout the generations. I had less of an appreciation than I do today. But still, you know, these were great places. And to see the destruction of the Jewish people, to see the places where the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, destroyed so many of our own brothers and sisters. So I remember many people after the trip, you know, come back to America to be with their family for Pesach. My parents were kind enough to let me stay in Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. And I remember we came back to Eretz Yisrael after, you know, literally spending this week looking at the, you know, the hell on earth that was. And we got into Eretz Yisrael early in the morning, went straight to the Kotel. Daven b'sikin at the Kotel. I can close my eyes in a second. I'm standing at the Kotel. I can picture it. I know exactly. I can tell you what I was wearing. I can taste it. I can smell it. It was very real. I remember one davening in YU when I was in college. It was a Maariv. It was around the time where there was a lot of stuff taking place in Eretz Yisrael. There was a lot of fear of war at that time. And I remember just davening a very passionate Maariv. I know exactly where, I remember which base medrash I was in. And it wasn't like a special, you know, get together, we're going to daven for Eretz Yisrael thing. I just remember feeling very connected that night. And I can show you, I have a picture which table I was standing at. So we all have those spontaneous moments where something, right, it's spontaneous, but it's, sometimes we can, you know, we know why it's happening. Why I feel that I need to be Lifnei Hashem, and somehow I find the ability to be Lifnei Hashem in that moment. So much so that it leaves a real mark on a person. But most of the time, we don't have the tools to call it up. In pressing moments, we find the way. And that's what this young man is saying to the Rebbe. He says, how do I, right? I want to be able, shu'uchal od lahasmid bar gashos hislavos, to maintain it, to continue it. Zai efshar li kla. I don't have a clue how to do that. And if I could just picture something, that would be such a stepping stone to being Lifnei Hashem. So listen to how he sympathized with him, and listen to the radical approach. I hope I'm interpreting it correct. Listen to the radical approach, somewhat seems radical approach, to how the Rebbe wants to deal with this. Three lines from the bottom of page 18. Umi yodeya em lo hay sezoz gam yesod v'siva schet ha'erefav. This is exactly, this desire to always be able to picture something, and seeing is believing, was really the chet of the Erev Rav. Now the truth is, there's something very, very sincere about what the Erev Rav did wrong. What's he talking about? She'amru, we know, Shmos Paraklam and Beis. Asei lanu Elohim, she'yelchu lefaneinu. Right? The actual pasuk is, asher yelchu lefaneinu. Let's make a God who can go in front of us. What was the chet Egel? Chet Egel just went one step too far. Right, as he says, Mishinir Ehu, they desire to see God. Rakheim here chiku lalechas ulavakesh lo tzir machshava bovad. But they went too far, and they didn't want to just picture something. They didn't want to just have a physical image to picture. Top of page 19, Ragam demus bepala. They went and they made a golden calf. So that's obviously going a little too far. But that basic desire to want to have a God that I can hold in my hand. What even Avodah Zarah is? Avodah Zarah wasn't just silliness. What is ours was the desire to have something that I can touch, that I can feel. We all understand that. I remember I heard last year of Aaron Kahn, one of the yeshiva in YU. He had a beautiful shmooze to our guys in the BMP program. And he said it so beautifully. He said the Jewish people have always prided themselves on the fact that we haven't allowed ourselves to do this. We haven't allowed ourselves to cheapen God and attach Him to some idol, to attach Him to a cross, to a figure, to something. And that's the tremendous mile of Klai Yisrael, and it's a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh that we have. That's what he was describing. Because there's a part of us that says if we could just have something to attach to, we'd change everything. To hold, to bow down before. Hashem has to be this invisible, you know, thing that becomes so hard for us to connect to. So he's sympathizing a little bit. He's saying they went too far, right? But Odi Stapshu, the tipshus, the foolishness was such that what? Lirtzos demus Elohim Mitzrayim, Rachman Otzon. They wanted to tap back into where they were coming. The Erev Rav was coming from years of idol worship of a very different kind. But I understand, he says, what you're going through. The Kevin Sheyasod Chavraseinu, who shalo ligar uligzor stam al ish asay kach vakach. And as the Rebbe again keeps reiterating, this chabura, this chavra, we're not going to say, say, you know, just do X, Y, or Z, and then you're going to tap in. Everyone has to come to it in their own way, and you have to work on it in your own way. Right? Why is it not going to work if it goes there, just do this, just do that? Oh, shalo yishmalan. You're not going to listen because, again, if you don't come to it in a healthy, natural way, it's going to seem either far-fetched or silly or just not going to be interested in it. Oh, sheyiras atzmo lemur, sheyesh lo machshava tova v'sorvis. So you're going to say, I already have it, and that's not going to work for me. It has to be natural. The Pesach Rebbe is not going to spell it out precisely for us. He's going to give us different etzas, and each person, each one of us, has to work as a chabura and then as individual Jews to go home at night and take a few minutes to think about what we learned and to try to bring it to Shacharis tomorrow, or bring it tomorrow if you haven't davened Maariv yet tonight, to try to be lifnei Hashem. And just learning about it automatically makes it easier. I said Dov last week after you know working on it for 45 minutes and then davening Maariv after, I felt like I had a better Maariv because we spent 45 minutes talking about how do I get close to God, and automatically that's going to help you in your davening. But again, how do we maintain it regularly? So he says ve'ein lo, right? A person might think they have it and they don't really have it. Ki be'emes gam kulam rotzim lios tohorei leiv b'nei aliyah. We all want to be people of pure thoughts. We want to be growing Jews. We would be embarrassed to admit that we've been davening the same Shmona Esrei day in and day out for the last who knows how many years. But it's hard to pick ourselves out of the dirt, out of the mud that we've sunken in through the choices we've made over the course of our lifetime. And we have to work together, all of us, to lower ourselves down back to that starting point, and to work together to the right to reach down. He says, "Ad kapos ragli nafsham v'gufam," to reach down to the soles, the bottom, the heel, so to speak, of the feet, our spiritual feet and our physical feet, down to the bottom of who we are. U'misham la'losam be'emtzah matimim lahem, and then each of us to take various techniques that are helpful for us. So he says, let's start from the beginning. He says, this is not a high level to start off on, but we want to make sure that everyone's on board. Let's start from the beginning. Listen to what he's about to suggest. Ready for this? Look what he suggests. Let's say we find ourselves like this Avreich who's complaining to him. We need something to touch, to feel, to think about, something tangible. Is there anything you could do for us? As a starting point. Not as an ending, but as a starting point. So look what he says. Bereshis gidol v'esrachus machshavas. So at the beginning of expanding our minds, which is what we're beginning. We're beginning a journey of how to become more mindful, to become b'nei machshavatov. Yismoch es atzmo al ha-raivet. Maybe we could rely on the opinion of the raivet. Shemeshiv al ha-ramam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Gimel Halacha Zayin, where the Rambam says that a person who believes that Hashem has a body is a heretic. It's outside the boundaries, right, as the Rambam codifies, so to speak, in his Yud Gimel Ikarim, right, that one of the principles of our faith is that we don't believe that Hashem has a body. But the Torah says Etzbelokim. The Torah says Yad Hashem. Okay, so obviously those things are not meant to be taken literal. They're to help us understand the concept. The truth is, I just want to point out, because people miss this point. We go in the reverse. We get confused. Right, we think Yad Hashem means that. Can you say it clearly? We think this is a yad, right? And then there's like a concept of a yad, that Hashem also has a concept of a yad. But this is yad. It's just the opposite. Yad is really a spiritual concept. This was given to us to help us understand, right, the true yad. So Hashem really does have a yad. Right? It's not. Don't start from what we know, call a yad, and say Hashem is a yad, because that'll confuse you. Hashem doesn't have a physical hand. But what we can do with our hand is supposed to be a very diluted, right, physical manifestation of a concept of yad. But yad Hashem, yad really means yad. That's real yad. This is a manifestation of yad. Right? It's not the reverse. Now, this is what yad, and Hashem has a manifestation of what we call our hand. It's important to see it in the other way around, to help us understand. But again, we don't believe that God has a body. And a person who does is a mid, is a heretic. So says the Raivet, slow down, Rambam. There were a lot of Jews in history who believed a lot of different things. This is what the Raivet writes. Vizel Eshonim, Aleph Aleph, Amar Avram, right? The Raivet always begins. Avram is his name. So he comments on the Rambam. V'lama kara lezemin. Why are you calling a Jew who believes that God has a body outside the boundaries of what Jews believe? Now, for many of us, that's shocking, because we've been trained. What? That is out of bounds. And in our world, that is out of bounds. That anyone who's going to tell you that it's an appropriate place for a Jew to believe that a God has a body, that is out of bounds. But the Rabbi says, don't be so quick to say such a person's a complete kofar, he's a heretic. Right? Kama gedolim v'tovim. There were very, very great rabbis in our history who wrote great works of Jewish philosophy. And they believed, and it wasn't at that point considered out of bounds, to believe that God does have some type of physical form. Now again, for us that's very jarring, it's very foreign to us. We're more used to the Rambam's presentation, which has been accepted by the Jewish people. But the Rabbi says it's not totally out of bounds. So says the PSS to the Rabbi, hold on a second. Now, Pi Pasha, Kasha Lahavin is Devei Rabbi. It's not so simple to understand the Rabbi. Halo Mikra Malehu, Kilo Re'isim Kol Tmuna. Right? The Rabbi obviously is not saying that it's acceptable to believe that God has a body in the way that we have a body. So you have the Rabbi must be giving us some type of middle ground between right what's totally off limits to believe that God actually has a body, and to believe that God that there's nothing that I can think about. Is there something in the middle that I can use as a stepping stone? And he's going to say yes, there is something you can use. The Ayin Bekesef Mishnah, who raises this question. That the Rabbi of course understood that you can't believe that God has a physical body like a human being. We don't. That's not our religion. So based on what we've explained above, maybe we could suggest the following. That a person should be Torah, should make the mistake. We should not make the mistake to think that God actually has a physical body. God forbid to say such a thing. Of course, we're not allowed to picture Hashem as being a human being of flesh and blood, even a very great tzaddik. You can't picture Hashem like that at all. However, we have a problem. The problem is we're human. And the problem is that our senses have only experienced things in a way that we understand them. And everyone we've ever met had a body. We never spoke to ghosts. We never spoke to Malachim. We never spoke to Hashem in a way that we felt that we could see Him, we could perceive Him. So, Rakhu Karutz Michomer. But we're created from physicality. We're an Ish Megusham. We're about Tmuna. We like things that we can touch, we can feel, we can see. Mitsuyo Lozo. So maybe, we're allowed to do the following. Maybe as a starting point to allow ourselves to have something to picture in order to expand our mind from there. And when we can get past this, God willing, we will, and we tap into a spirit of nevuah, whatever that means, over time, that physical image will be stripped away. So what did He just give us for permission to do? He gave us permission to do what this person who was complaining to Him asked to do. What did he ask to do? He said, can I at least picture Shani Omid Lifnei Kisei HaKavod? Can I picture myself standing before Hashem's throne? Now, I don't know what that means, because the Kisei HaKavod is also not a physical thing. Right? But if we can picture a Kisei, and we can picture a throne, and it's not picturing God having a body, which would be a total perversion of what Hashem is, so it's not going too far. And hopefully over time, we're going to picture, we'll be able to feel in the presence of the throne without picturing the throne. Right? But he's essentially giving us a heter, based on this sheet of the Ravid, to begin to picture myself standing in front of Hashem's throne. Not to stand in front, because again, if I try to picture God himself, it's going to be a brachal of a teller, it's going to be a heretical thought. It's going to be an inappropriate thought. You can allow yourself to picture yourself when you daven standing in front of Hashem's throne. What does that mean? In order to allow, right, to give a little something for our ear to grasp, so to speak. In order again to appease, so to speak, my mind, which wants to so badly picture something. So I can have some dimion of something. So you, member of the Chabur, he's speaking to us, every one of us. We're all one Chabur. He says, you member of the Chabur, allow yourself, this is a starting point, to picture yourself standing with Nekisek Foda. And imagine now you're like a child who's coming before a father, a very powerful one. You're standing in the throne room, and you're praying before your father, Rachim na alai avi, have mercy on me, my father. My spirit is broken, my body is struggling. Now I know your page is out, so let me allow you to read the last three lines as we conclude tonight's Chavura, and then I'll get you a copy next time for Osches. Hishlach Tani Mimchav, you start to benechem itan. Hashem, I feel so pained by the fact that you've cast me aside and you've hidden your face from me. Magur misaviv, from the time you threw me out, from the ace, Hishlach Tani, from the moment you threw me out, Magur misaviv, I'm surrounded by Tav. I feel so overwhelmed without you. How am I going to make decisions? How am I going to make decisions? How am I going to decide, you know, what to pursue in my life? We all have a million decisions we're making on a daily basis. Sometimes they're more minor. You know, you're standing in front of the herring aisle at Grand and Essex and figuring out which herring you should buy for Shabbos with 75 different choices, or the dips. That's also, you know, that can be a weighty decision. Sometimes we have to make bigger decisions, important decisions that shape the direction of our family, of our careers, of our relationship with our spouse or with our children or with our Creator, right? And I feel magur misaviv when I'm not in your presence, Hashem. I'm paralyzed by the thought of making decisions. Umihu aish af believe evin shalom yimas b'shosh mitzayim machshavas. And who will not, at least, their heart will begin to melt when you picture yourself standing in front of Hashem, who's kol yachol. And again, I'm picturing the kisei hakavod, whatever that means. But again, it's not heretical to picture the kisei hakavod. How do you picture it? We have to figure it out. Eichel omid lefnei kisei kvodo, eish ochla, picture the kisei maybe as a fiery throne, right? A throne made of fire. Whatever it is. But again, it's not outside the bounds of the Yud Gimel Ikar to picture something in this way. And again, over time, as you develop a feeling, you really start to feel your heart racing a little bit because you're standing in the throne room and you're really talking to Avinu Shema Shemaim in a way that he can respond. When you're begging for something, whose heart's not going to begin to melt? So again, this is an Eitzah, a beginning of an Eitzah. Again, it's a long process. We're going to have to keep working together every week till we get to the end of the process. And hopefully by then we'll have all the answers. But again, at least during these days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, it's a little bit more in the air. We should try to hold on to Yom Kippur a little bit more and try to continue to tap into these feelings and to begin to use some of these techniques till we can begin to create a real presence of Shivisi Hashem L'Negdita. Alright, everyone should have a good Yantiv. Next week, I assume we're not on.
We're off
for a Chol Moed break. But Mirtz Hashem will pick up after that. Okay, Shkayach, thank you everyone for coming.